We unconditionally stand with Syrian people, army and leadership, which paid a heavy price to defend just Arab causes. Syria is the source of our history and civilizations. Arab states should return to Syria.
What happens in Syria affects Lebanon and vice versa. We entered into Syria at a particular time in support of its leadership, army, and people. We came to Syria to defend Lebanon. If Syria had collapsed, the whole region would have collapsed. Even Iran's support to Syria was aimed at defending Iran because Syria was the first defense line of all resistance forces in the region.
Participants rejected all forms of normalization with Israel. They welcomed the restoration of diplomatic relations between Iran and Saudi Arabia, underlining it would greatly contribute to solving regional problems.
The conference is being held at a time Syrians are extremely suffering from the repercussions of a foreign-backed conflict, unilateral sanctions, and most recently, the devastating earthquake. It's a wake-up call to the international community to take urgent actions and help resolve Syria's dilemmas. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
The combined joint drill of Iran, China, and Russia in the north of Oman Sea ended with a parade of participating vessels in front of the Iranian Jamaran destroyer.
We have successfully wrapped up the final day of the joint exercise. On the last day, we practiced rescuing a ship hijacked by pirates and extinguished the fire of a damaged ship. These important exercises were aimed at improving security in the northern part of the Indian Ocean, as well as countering maritime piracy and terrorism. We have managed to achieve all predetermined goals of the drill. Our main goal is to attract the collective participation of friendly and aligned countries in this region.
On the final day of the 2023 Maritime Security Belt exercise, with the presence of the naval forces of Iran, China, and Russia, the maritime and aerial units of the three countries carried out fire-extinguishing operations. They also conducted rescue and relief operations of the injured as well as towing a damaged ship to a port. In another exercise, special operations teams of Iran, China, and Russia practiced freeing a trade vessel that had been hypothetically hijacked by pirates in international waters. In this part of the exercise, arresting the pirates, countering the acts of sabotage by pirates to delay rescue operation, and also treating the injured were successfully conducted.
Our goal from conducting this exercise was cooperation based on mutual respect. We believe powerful countries like Iran, China, and Russia can play an important role in helping the global economy and security.
The 2023 Maritime Security Belt Joint Exercise is the fourth joint naval exercise of Iran, Russia, and China in recent years. Kazakhstan and Pakistan were also present as observers in this year's exercise. Admiral Irani said the naval units of these countries will participate in 2024 joint exercise.
The exercises are the latest in the joint drills by Iran, China, and Russia. Iran says all regional countries are most welcome to take part in the next year drills because they are the ones that are truly in charge of establishing security in the region. Mahdi Abbasian, Konarak.
A scandal involving a Quran desecration at a school in northern England has continued to escalate, despite the resolution of the affair by the local community. With a local mosque and its imam facing a sustained onslaught by right-wingers in the press and government too. Hafez Mohammed Mateen Anwar played a prominent role in easing tensions after news spread across the community of a Quran desecration by students at Kettlethorpe High School in Wakefield. When the news went viral, talk of an alleged death threat and a street protest erupted. Mateen Anwar offered up his mosque to the school and police as a location for a community meeting, an opportunity to clear the air, lay out the facts, and end the matter once and for all.
Now, as far as the local Muslim community are concerned, the situation was dealt with amicably and ended on good terms, with communication playing a big part in making the difference. However, it seems as if the government and also certain right-wing elements within mainstream media appear to be deeply unhappy with the way the story played out.
The meeting successfully resolved the affair, with police, the school head teacher, and one of the students' mothers, all in attendance. But instead of celebrating the peaceful conclusion, the British press ran with inflammatory interpretations of the story.
The police acted, recorded it as a non-crime hate incident, and the boys were, the four pupils were suspended. So that shows that we now have de facto blasphemy laws in the UK.
The mosque is now under investigation by a charity watchdog, while Mateen Anwar has been accused of stoking the row. He is also being portrayed as an extremist over Islamic views he's expressed in the past. Press TV spoke with the embattled imam, who blasted the media for peddling misinformation, such as forcing the mother of a student to attend and apologise.
What's the purpose of that meeting? The purpose of that meeting, Robert, was to let the community know that what you're seeing on social media, these lies, they're not true. Out of those students, one of their mothers, in fact, contacted our team on her own accord and explained how she felt. And she, in fact, herself invited our team to her home address by her own choice. The mother attended the mosque and wanted to sort of relate to the community about how she felt. A number of points were addressed on that meeting, which then led to a really amicable conclusion to this. There's a number of statements I've come across, statements from ministers, statement from the education minister himself, and a number of other political figures, people of media background, who have sadly just followed onto this tangent of lies and continue to progress that further without actually trying to investigate the truth, which is sad. It's really a sad reality that they've not actually investigated what went about. We were successful, Robert, in stopping a demonstration which could have led to further incidents. We were responsible for the reinstation of the children back into the school.
The imam added he's exploring legal options to challenge what he says is an Islamophobic smear campaign against him by right-wing elements who are deeply unhappy with British Muslims successfully standing up for their faith. Robert Carter, Wakefield.
The Israel Apartheid Week has started in Gaza and in many cities around the world. This is aimed at mobilizing grassroots support for the BDS campaign to isolate apartheid Israel in the global community, replicating the resistance movement against the South African apartheid.
Killing machine of apartheid Israel.
The week started with a message of solidarity to the Palestinians of the Gaza Strip from Mandela Mandela, the grandson of the South African leader Nelson Mandela.
We feel your pain and suffering and stand in solidarity with you in the struggle against the injustice and brutality imposed by the apartheid Israeli regime. We salute our heroes and martyrs of Gaza and the ordinary men and women, youth and children, who daily face the brutal killing machine of apartheid Israel. You are not alone.
As part of its events, the BDS chose to screen a movie about horror experienced by a Palestinian young girl during the Nakba. The ethnic cleansing of Palestinians by Zionists in 1948.
Well, I think the way Israel reacted to Farha is very typical of Zionist propaganda. They wanted to suppress the Palestinian voice. They didn't want us to tell our own narrative. And I think the best way of confronting this campaign of hate and racism is by producing more cultural products.
Palestinian institutions play an important role in informing people of the history of Palestine through different mediums in order to build a generation that is capable of reclaiming its rights.
I think that the new generation is passionate about learning the truth and the history of the struggle because during their entire life they have experienced both physical and structural violence perpetrated by the Israeli occupation. They want to know why they suffer, are not allowed to travel, and live in poverty. All this leads them to question the roots of all the problems.
The BDS movement has stressed the need to press ahead with the campaigns against the Israeli apartheid, especially because the regime has intensified its persecution to maintain a system of settler colonial oppression and domination over the Palestinian lives and land.
Recently, we witnessed a growing solidarity with the Palestinian people, especially when the new far-right fascist cabinet took office and Israeli massacre increased in the West Bank. We aspire to reach the international community, not only in the civil global community, to boycott, divest from and sanction Israel.
In Israel Apartheid Week, Palestinians reaffirmed their commitment to resisting occupation, exploitation, oppression and apartheid like any other people, by all means permitted under the international law and the UN General Assembly resolution, which includes armed struggle. Ula Al-Asi, Gaza.
On Thursday, a delegation of survivors and victims, families from last month's migrant shipwreck at Cutro in southern Italy, met with the Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni and Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani. On February 26, over 80 people died after a rickety boat with about 200 migrants on board broke up in rough seas. 33 of the victims were minors. At least 16 people are still missing and feared dead. The shipwreck was one of the worst migration disasters in recent European history. No journalists were admitted at Thursday's meeting between Meloni and some of the relatives of the victims and survivors of the Cutro tragedy.
There must be a joint effort with other European countries when it comes to rescuing migrants in danger at sea. If the EU does not take concrete responsibility in governing the migration phenomenon, more tragedies will take place. Let's not forget that this massive influx of migrants began when Gaddafi was overthrown and killed in Libya in 2011.
In the past weeks, Italy has seen an increase in attempts to cross the central Mediterranean in a new shipwreck that took place about 100 miles off the Libyan coast. Between March 11 and 12, at least 30 migrants went missing and are thought to have died. The rescue operation was partially coordinated by the Italian Coast Guard. During a Q&A session in the lower house of parliament on Tuesday, Meloni and her government were accused of failing to offer timely assistance to smugglers' boats in distress and, in more general terms, of not doing enough to try and save people attempting to cross the Mediterranean Sea.
Not only Italy did its part, but it did it in an area outside its jurisdiction. The operation had been initially coordinated by the Libyan authorities.
Once and for all, Libyan authorities are not capable of providing safe and rescue assistance to migrants in line with international standards. The question here is if Italy is doing all it can to save human lives.
Since day one of its mandate, the Giorgia Meloni government has pledged to press ahead with an agenda aimed at stopping what it calls illegal migration. In January, the officials introduced a new code of conduct for humanitarian ships, making it much harder for NGO-run vessels to rescue migrants lost at sea. Lately, Rome has even tried to pass the buck on to others for the current Mediterranean migrant crisis. Earlier this week, the Italian government said the Russian private military company Wagner was behind the recent exponential surge in migrant boats from African coasts. The number of migrants reaching Italy's shores so far this year exceeds 20,000. Max Civili, Rome.
Russian President Vladimir Putin held talks with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad in the Kremlin. The head of states of the two countries are in constant contact as relations between Moscow and Damascus are developing in various areas.
Thanks to our joint efforts and the decisive contribution of the Russian armed forces, significant results have been achieved in Syria in the fight against international terrorism. This makes it possible to stabilize the socio-economic and domestic political situation. Unfortunately, the Syrian people faced another very serious problem, a catastrophe, an earthquake. This, of course, exacerbates the situation. As real friends, we are trying to support you. As you know, our units under the Ministry of Emergency Situations also worked here, and representatives of the armed forces stationed in Syria are also contributing to the fight against the consequences of the earthquake.
Meanwhile, Assad expressed support for Russia's special operation in Ukraine and thanked Moscow for its help following the earthquake.
This is my first visit since the beginning of this special operation in Ukraine, and I would like to repeat we fully support your fight against neo-Nazis and old Nazis. I'm talking about the old Nazis because the West has always received them on the ground and now continues to help them. We support this special operation not because our countries are friends. Our position proceeds from the fact that the world really needs a stabilization now, otherwise it will come to collapse.
This visit has several important components. Syria survived a devastating earthquake with many victims. Syria needs economic help and assistance. Syria has problems with energy prices, which have risen. As an important ally of Russia, it will receive this assistance. The second component is no less important. A meeting of representatives of Iran, Turkey, and Russia at the level of deputy ministers of foreign affairs is to be held in Moscow, where a potential unfreezing of relations between Damascus and Ankara will be discussed. The very fact of such negotiations in Moscow already speaks of a positive trend.
The situation in Syria and bilateral military cooperation were discussed by the defense ministers of the two countries. Sergei Shoigu, in a conversation with his counterpart Ali Mahmoud Abbas, expressed condolences to the Syrian people in connection with the February earthquake and stressed the importance of close contacts, which are aimed at maintaining stability in the Arab country in the field of defense and the fight against terrorism.
The visit by the Syrian president is indicative of strengthening ties between the two countries. The Syrian-Turkish dossier is another important outcome of this visit. The near future will show whether this will lead to the restoration of ties between Syria and Turkey. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In the United States, according to multiple media reports, federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies are discussing security preparations for a possible arrest of former U.S. President Donald Trump. Trump is under a grand jury investigation by the Manhattan District Attorney's Office on charges of falsifying business records and is also charged with paying hush money to an indecent actress. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The website of Reuters news agency has covered this story and tells us more. Former U.S. President Donald Trump has called on supporters to protest his potential arrest on Tuesday, 21st of March, as Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg appears to be close to deciding whether to charge him in the probe into the hush money payment made to immoral film star Stormy Daniels during the 2016 presidential election. Donald Trump said in a post on Truth Social on Saturday, 18th of March, illegal leaks indicate that the far and away leading Republican candidate and former president of the United States will be arrested on Tuesday of next week. Trump continued, "Protest, take our nation back." A spokesperson for the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, which has been investigating a $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels, declined to comment. Donald Trump, who is seeking the Republican nomination for the presidency in 2024, has said he will continue campaigning even if he is charged with a crime. Trump's call comes as several recent signs appear to point to the grand jury Alvin Bragg organized being close to possibly filing charges against him. Recently, former Trump attorney Michael Cohen testified before the grand jury, and Stormy Daniels met with Manhattan prosecutors. With Michael Cohen's testimony, almost every major figure involved in the investigation has appeared before the grand jury. Donald Trump was also invited to testify before the grand jury in the coming days, which is an indication that a verdict on charges is coming imminent. Trump has declined the offer. Alvin Bragg's inquiry centers on a $130,000 payment that Michael Cohen made to Stormy Daniels in the lead-up to the 2016 election for her to remain silent about an inappropriate affair that she had with Donald Trump. Meanwhile, Michael Cohen pleaded guilty to a handful of charges in 2018, including one for a campaign finance violation relating to the payment. He was sentenced to several years in prison, but was later allowed to serve the remainder of his sentence under house arrest. Michael Cohen has said he paid Stormy Daniels at Donald Trump's direction. The payment was made during Trump's presidential campaign, raising speculation that Cohen used campaign funds to silence Stormy Daniels, whose real name is Stephanie Clifford. However, Michael Cohen insists that he paid her out of his own pocket, and neither Donald Trump nor his campaign reimbursed him afterwards. Stormy Daniels has sued both Trump and Cohen, charging them with defamation. She also argues that the non-disclosure agreement between Michael Cohen and her is invalid because Donald Trump never signed the non-disclosure agreement. Meanwhile, the New York Times has also covered this story. With the Manhattan grand jury indictment likely, but its timing unclear, Donald Trump sought to rally supporters to his side, declaring that he would be arrested on Tuesday, 21st of March, and called for protests. Trump made the declaration on his site Truth Social at 7:26 a.m. local time on Saturday, 18th of March. 2 hours later, spokesman issued a statement saying that Trump had not written his post with direct knowledge of the timing of any arrest, adding, "President Trump is rightfully highlighting his innocence and the weaponization of our injustice system." Within hours, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy posted on Twitter that he was calling for an investigation into whether federal funds were being used for politically motivated prosecutions. A thinly veiled threat to Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg, a spokesman for the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, declined to comment. Prosecutors working for Alvin Bragg have signaled that an indictment of Donald Trump could be imminent, but people with knowledge of the matter said that they have not told Trump's lawyers when the charges, expected to stem from a 2016 hush money payment to a film star, would be sought or an arrest made. The people said at least one more witness is expected to testify in front of the grand jury, which could delay an indictment. One of the people said that even if grand jury were to vote to indict the former president on Monday, 20th of March, a Tuesday surrender was unlikely, given the need to arrange timing, travel, and other logistics. The statement from Donald Trump's spokesman did not explain how he had landed on Tuesday as an arrest date. One person with knowledge of the matter said Trump's advisers had guessed that it could happen around then and that someone might have relayed that to the former president. A lawyer for Donald Trump, Susan Neschels, said that his post had been based on news reports and accused the Manhattan District Attorney's Office of conducting a political prosecution. British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story. Top Republicans, including some of Donald Trump's potential rivals for the Republican Party's 2024 presidential nomination, rushed to his defense after the former president said he expected to be arrested over the next few days. Former Vice President Mike Pence, who is widely expected to launch a campaign for the Republican nomination in the coming weeks, said, "The idea of indicting a former president of the United States is deeply troubling to me, as it is to tens of millions of Americans." Among those coming to Donald Trump's defense on Saturday were House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, who claimed the possible indictment would be an outrageous abuse of power by a radical district attorney who lets violent criminals walk as he pursues political vengeance against Donald Trump. Kevin McCarthy said he would direct relevant Republican-led House committees to immediately investigate if federal funds are being used to subvert our democracy by interfering in elections with politically motivated prosecutions. McCarthy has not endorsed Trump's White House campaign, but Donald Trump helped Kevin McCarthy secure the speakership after a contentious campaign that required multiple rounds of voting. Kevin McCarthy's predecessor as Speaker, Democrat Nancy Pelosi, said in a statement, "The former president's recent announcement is reckless, doing so to keep himself in the news and to foment unrest among his supporters. He cannot hide from his violations of the law, disrespect for our elections, and incitements to violence." Law enforcement officials in New York have been making security preparations for the possibility that Donald Trump could be indicted, but there has been no public announcement of any time frame or any indictment. Mike Pence, who has been escalating his criticism of the former president in recent weeks, said no one is above the law. He claimed, "I'm confident President Trump can take care of himself. My focus is going to continue to be on issues that are affecting the American people." Representatives for the Florida governor Ron DeSantis, another potential candidate who is seen as Donald Trump's most serious rival, did not immediately respond to requests for comment. Former United Nations Ambassador Nikki Haley, another candidate, did not address the investigation while campaigning in South Carolina.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to the Spotlight. In this edition, Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says it is filing a lawsuit against the Israeli regime in the International Criminal Court. This comes after the ICC announced that it has made its decision to investigate the Israeli occupation and war crimes against Palestinians. Hamas sees this as a step forward on the path of achieving justice, but at the same time, the regime has intensified its crackdown against Palestinians, and the violence has left about 90 Palestinians dead so far only this year. In this edition, we will scrutinize the different aspects of this move and how it can help Palestinians in their plight. And in order to do that, we are joined by Khaled Barakat, a journalist and activist who is joining us live from Vancouver. Also, we have with us Mukaymer Abusada, professor of political science from Al-Azhar University in Gaza City. Thank you very much to both of you gentlemen. Let's begin with our guests in Vancouver. Now, this does seem like a step forward, but how optimistic should we be, sir?
Well, not very much, because of the past experience with the ICC and with international agencies in general. Historically, some of these organizations might rule in favor of Palestinians, but these kind of decisions don't really have teeth in order to implement their decisions, let alone when it's not a decision within, that carries political weight, or that it's by the ICC itself that its credibility is on stake. In fact, it acts these days as a tool for NATO and Western powers. Palestinians must use all arenas in order to expose the Israeli occupation, absolutely. And they have been doing so for many, many years. But we're not optimistic about any of this, although it's important to persuade, these kind of cases and to put Israel on trial because of its war crimes. The building of colonies is war crimes. The massacres that Israel has been doing in Palestine for the past 75 years, their war crimes. I mean, it's very obvious cases, but even United Nations General Assembly or United Nations Security Councils, their resolutions were never implemented. Not one single resolution by these institutions was implemented, and that's because Israel is always covered and backed by the United States and Western imperialist powers.
Thank you very much, Mr. Baraka. Let's bring in our guest from Gaza City, Professor Abu Sada. Now, our guest from Vancouver does not seem very optimistic, but still these are baby steps forward in order to push for the rights of Palestinians. Let's not forget that, according to all international laws, legitimate resistance is something that is recognized. What is your opinion?
Well, first of all, many thanks for having me in your program, Spotlight. And second thing, let me start by saying that Hamas as a Palestinian resistance group cannot take Israel to the ICC. As a matter of fact, it's Palestine, the Palestine state, which is an observer state at the UN General Assembly, can prosecute Israel and take Israel to the International Criminal Court. And this is what the Palestinian leadership and the Palestinian, the state of Palestine, has been trying to do lately since Palestine came an observer state at the UN General Assembly in November of 2012, which is 11 years ago. And also Palestine joined the ICC in 2016. And there are Palestinian requests of the ICC to prosecute Israeli crimes and Israeli appalling atrocities against the Palestinian people, whether Israel war crimes or crimes against humanity, which have been committed against the Palestinian civilian population in the West Bank and Gaza over more than 55 years of Israeli occupation and Israeli aggression against the Palestinians in the occupied Palestinian territory. So, yes, the Palestinians can do that since, as I mentioned, Palestine is a member of the UN General Assembly and also has joined the ICC. But let me also add one more thing, that the ICC has started preliminary investigation a few years ago when the ex-ICC Attorney General, Fatou Bensouda, was the Attorney General of the ICC. It opened a preliminary investigation in Israeli crimes against the Palestinians. But unfortunately, the current Attorney General of the ICC, Mr. Karim Khan, to be honest with you, he has failed to do his job as an AG of the ICC. He hasn't done what he is requested to do to investigate Israeli crimes and Israeli atrocities against the Palestinians. Let me show you the double standards of the ICC. When the ICC just issued yesterday an arrest warrant against the Russian President Vladimir Putin,
Professor,
because of Russian invasion of Ukraine.
And Professor, I'm going to cut you off right there because this is another issue we want to discuss in depth, and the double standards of ICC itself is a whole different story. But before we get into the ICC itself and how it is going to carry out this whole investigation, let's talk more about Palestinians and, of course, the Israeli regime. You did mention that Palestinians are a member of the UN General Assembly. They are a member of the ICC, and it is completely the legal pathways, actually, are open there for the Palestinians. But Israel is not a member of the ICC. How does this work out?
Well, it's true that Israel has not signed the Rome Statute that established the ICC. Israel is not a member of the ICC, just like Russia that is not a member of the ICC. Israel being not being a member of the ICC doesn't mean that Israel can escape legal prosecution by the ICC. Since Israel has committed, according to the ICC and according to many international organizations like Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International, who have basically indicated in many of their reports that Israel has committed war crimes against the Palestinians, especially in the Israeli aggression against Gaza in 2021, in May of 2021. In addition to that, Israeli settlement activity in the Palestinian territory is classified as a war crime that is in contradiction of the Fourth Geneva Convention. So what I'm trying to say to you is that, yes, Israel is not a member of the ICC, but that still Israeli officials or Israeli military commanders will be subjected to ICC prosecution. And Israel cannot escape its responsibility for not being a member of the ICC.
Okay, so our guest from Vancouver, in your opinion, if the ICC does issue a ruling, how likely is that ruling to be implemented?
It will not be implemented. It will just carry a sentimental value. I'm not saying it's not important. It's absolutely important for Palestinians to expose Israeli war crimes, to have this on record, because it's part of the history of the Palestinian struggle. But the problem with this is that the Palestinian Authority is counting on this as the only strategy it has. And the resistance should not fall into this. The resistance strategy should include its political, diplomatic, and popular work. But at the end of the day, what force occupiers and colonizers to end their project is power, it's resistance. It's an actual turning the occupation into a losing project. And the other problem is that the Palestinians have been members of the United Nations, represented by the PLO since 1974. The PLO as a legitimate representative body of the Palestinian people officially. Palestinians were playing a much more political and effective role in the United Nations and on international level when they were, representing a Palestinian liberation movement and not merely a Palestinian state, almost like a decorative position than a real position. We know, for example, that Israel is the only nuclear power in the Middle East, yet no one investigates Israel. Why? Because Israel is not a signatory of the Rome Pact, but because Israel enjoy the covers and the political back and support of the United States, particularly United States and Western powers. So, yes, Palestinians might achieve a symbolic victory here and there, in terms of international, agencies, but it's not really, it should not be, a strategy for us in terms of the liberation process.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Professor was also discussing the double standards of the ICC. So, Professor, back to that topic. You just mentioned that the ICC has issued an arrest warrant for Putin, and you were talking about the double standards of the ICC. Let's talk more about that, and with respect to Palestinians, how likely is it for us to see a similar reaction from the ICC?
Yes, but let me just also add one more note here that members of the ICC are 132 countries out of 194 countries. So not all members of the UN General Assembly are members or signatory to the Rome Statute. So only 132 countries are members or has joined the ICC. Speaking of the ICC double standards, the international community in general and the ICC in particular, as I was trying to say, Palestine has joined the ICC in 2016, and the Palestinian leadership and the Palestinian state has requested the ICC to investigate Israeli crimes and Israeli crimes against humanity and war crimes, and also the crime of aggression against the Palestinian people in terms of Israeli settlement activity in the occupied Palestinian territory, and also crimes against Palestinian civilians, whether in Gaza or in the West Bank. And unfortunately, the ICC has failed until now to investigate seriously Israeli crimes. And Israel has said that it will not allow ICC investigators to enter the Palestinian occupied territory, since it's under Israeli control. But at least the ICC can enter the Gaza Strip from the Egyptian territory, where Israel has no control whatsoever on the border between Gaza and Egypt. So that is one case where ICC prosecutor and ICC investigators can come to the Gaza Strip and investigate Israeli crimes in the Gaza Strip. But also what I was trying to say that within a year, the ICC has moved in a very speedy way to investigate crimes against humanity and war crimes in Ukraine in only 1 year. But it has failed for the past 7 years to investigate in a very serious way Israeli crimes. And as we just saw, the ICC issued an arrest warrant against Russian President Vladimir Putin, and no arrest warrant has been issued by the ICC against any Israeli official or against any Israeli army commanders. While, as I just mentioned, that many international organizations like Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, and also a special committee that was established by the UN Human Rights Council to investigate Israeli war crimes against Palestinian civilians in the Great March of Return of 2018 and 2019, where the head of that commission issued a statement that what happened basically account to war crimes. But in spite of all of that, which is on the record, in spite of all the documents which has been provided by Palestinian human rights groups and international human rights groups to the ICC, as until this moment, no arrest warrant or no serious investigation to begin with has been initiated in Israeli crimes against the Palestinian civilian population.
And as our guest in Vancouver also pointed out, the Israeli regime enjoys very strong support from the U.S., and we do remember investigators from the ICC trying to investigate war crimes in the occupied territories being under a lot of pressure by the U.S. government in particular to drop those investigations. So let's go back to our guest in Vancouver. Obviously, we are not going to see any kind of speedy ruling the way Professor mentioned from Gaza, like the case of Putin, for example, or we also remember Omar al-Bashir. We are not expecting that to happen, but in case we do see a ruling, how long is it going to take, in your opinion? And what is the value of this ruling? Of course, as you mentioned yourself, we're not expecting anything to be implemented based on that. The ICC does not have the power to implement its own rulings. So what are the consequences of that ruling?
Well, I think I just wanted to, I agree with the professor in terms of his analysis on Hamas' role and that it cannot persuade this. Even Palestinian popular organizations could have a campaign to do this. It's important, in my view, more than the ruling itself, because the idea is to raise the awareness about the nature of the Zionist regime in Palestine, that it's a colonialist settler regime, and that Palestinians are fighting this colonialist project, not just Israel, but also Israel backers, particularly the United States and Western power. And we saw also that nothing, for example, was done when George Bush and Blair, committed war crimes in Iraq. Iraqis and Arabs remember very well when Madeleine Albright say that, killing 500,000 Iraqi children was worth it for oil companies. This is on record. And these warmongers have said that on record that Iraqis have been killed, not in tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, but over 1.5 million innocent people. And nothing was done. Yet we saw, yesterday how they wanted to persuade a case against Putin. And before that, as you mentioned, Omar Bashir. Palestinians in general, they support exposing Israel on every international arena as long as this is not going to require certain, conditions on them or concessions, because the Palestinian cause is very just and it always enjoy international support in terms of, United Nations and other agencies. Our problem, my final comment, is the current Palestinian leadership. It is not a trusted leadership. It is not elected by the Palestinian people. Mahmoud Abbas and his cronies in Ramallah do not represent the Palestinian people. And so we want a united Palestinian leadership by the people, and we want Palestinian political bodies that is also by Palestinian people themselves. This is very important, and it gives any international campaigns by Palestinians a more credible, than the current status.
Thank you very much. It's interesting that you should mention that. Let's bring in the professor. Of course, Professor, solidarity is the name of the game for Palestinians. They need to be united. And let's not forget that as we speak in Sharm el-Sheikh, there's a meeting underway. Let's see, in your opinion, how that meeting can help the Palestinians. Will it actually lead to any kind of alleviation of the suffering of Palestinians? How many times has Israel promised not to attack Palestinians, and still it has broken its promise?
Well, that is definitely a very important issue here. Let me remind you and remind your viewers that a meeting was held in Amman, in Jordan, Aqaba, 3 weeks ago on February 26 of this year, 2023. And supposedly the goal of that meeting was to de-escalate the tension between the Palestinians and Israelis. But over the past 3 weeks, Israel has committed many crimes, many incursions into the city of Jenin and the city of Nablus, killed many Palestinian civilians and many Palestinian fighters who belong to the Lion's Den or to the Jenin Battalion. And unfortunately, Israel did not respect the commitments that were made by Israelis and Palestinians during the Aqaba meeting 3 weeks ago. And today's meeting in Sharm el-Sheikh, which also included the five parties, the U.S., Israel, Jordan, Egypt, and the Palestinian Authority, that and the goal also of today's meeting is to de-escalate the tension between the Palestinians in the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem, and also the Israeli occupation. But it doesn't seem to me that Israel is willing to respect its commitment in those understandings. The Palestinian delegation who met with the Israelis with the sponsorship of the U.S. is requesting Israel to put an end to its settlement expansion in the West Bank, to also put an end to its incursions into Palestinian areas classified as Area C, where the PA has total control. And also the Palestinians are asking Israel to release around half a billion U.S. dollar, which has been confiscated by the Israeli authorities, accusing the PA of sponsoring Palestinian martyrs and Palestinians who have participated in resistance against Israel. Overall, let me say that there is a popular and factional Palestinian opposition to the Sharm el-Sheikh meeting, which was convened today, as I mentioned, between the five members, the U.S., Israel, Egypt, Jordan, and the Palestinian Authority. But let's wait and see whether those understandings will be respected by Israel or not. But I doubt it very much, because since the beginning of this year, more than 80 Palestinians have been killed and executed by the Israeli occupation forces, and Israel did not stop its settlement expansion or its appalling aggression against the Palestinian people. It seems to me that it's going to take a lot of work, a lot of effort by the U.S., Egypt, and Jordan to put pressure on Israel to respect its commitment and to alleviate the daily conditions of the 5 million Palestinians who live in West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem.
And the question that remains, Professor, is even if they do, can they stop Israel? Well, I'm sorry that we don't have much time to continue this discussion. Obviously, we need a lot more time. Our guest from Vancouver, thank you very much, Khaled Barakat, a journalist and activist, for joining us. Also, Mukaimer Abusada, professor of political science from Al-Azhar University. It was great to have you on this show, and of course, we definitely need to discuss this more. Thank you very much, and good night.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.